Welcome to Sportsmen of Colorado, Colorado's premier outdoor radio show, heard every Saturday afternoon on KLZ 560, with insights on hunting, fishing, archery, guns, and ammo from Colorado's top outfitters, featuring the industry's leading experts on how to enhance your experience in the great outdoors. Now, here's your host, Scott Whatley.
Welcome to Sportsman of Colorado. Thank you so much for joining us. We are glad you are with us. Hope everyone is enjoying a great weekend so far. Glad to have Kevin Flesch with us today. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks, Scott.
Man, it's always good to have you. And we've got Austin Parr with us, and we try to get Austin on at the front of every show here to run down, give us a fishing report. But before we get into fishing, and I want to talk a little bit of spring turkey and congratulate Austin on his turkey he just got. So, Austin, congrats, man.
Thank you, Scott, and thanks for having me.
You bet, you bet. So, quick story on your turkey. What was the rundown?
Definitely been putting a lot of effort in on those guys. Was fortunate to get a mountain bird, which has been good. I've been out on the plains in some other different states as well, and went and was able to find some birds on the roost, which I am by no means a turkey hunting expert by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly up in the mountains, that seems to be proving key for me, and was able to get in tight and close the deal yesterday morning.
Wow, well, good deal. Yeah, and I just got back from Kansas with our good friend Chris Rowe, Rowe Hunting Resources, and Chris did a great job. And see, Austin, the key is a guide. These guys know what they're doing. But no, it was fun, man. And yeah, able to connect on a nice time yesterday morning myself. So, and Kevin was actually supposed to be with me on that trip, but had some work matters come up. So we're going to redo that next year. But yeah, the spring turkey is on. And man, a lot of fun. Well, Austin, man, fill us in, Kevin. You are the fishing expert on this show by far, so get this going.
Go ahead, Austin. I was just going to say I was out of Cherry Creek last week, and tell us about sort of what's going on.
Yeah, and this time of year is so funny, too, because it's similar to fall for me, because there's so many different things that you can go and do with great fishing really around all around, and obviously we're talking about spring turkey hunting there as well. But this time of year, we've been finding that as you mentioned there, Cherry Creek is turning on in a big way at the moment. Not so much from shore, but definitely more of that boat lead core trolling type presentation. And we've been talking about that now for a couple of weeks, but the bite has really, really turned on. A lot of small crankbaits definitely near the main basin. Some trolling in anywhere from typically 20 to 23 feet of water, 1.5 to 2 miles an hour, right near the bottom, as tight near the bottom as you can get.
Yeah, and the thing that I found last weekend, we caught some fish and some nice fish, is you had to be really careful keeping those lures on the bottom. I mean, you really needed to be, you know, in that bottom foot or two and just watching how the lead core was responding and making sure those baits were bumping the bottom a little bit, not too much, obviously, but just enough so that you get those fish's attention.
It's all about just being right there without just crashing into the bottom.
Right. Yeah, and of course the tournament was last weekend. I didn't hear the results, but I'm assuming they did pretty well. There were a bunch of boats out there.
Everybody caught a lot of fish. Yeah, a lot of people did quite well out there, and that's going to really be extending for the next several weeks on this lead core until we really start getting pretty hot. But I would imagine 1.5 to 2 weeks at the very minimum for this lead core bite to continue in the way that it is.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Chatfield then. With Cherry Creek, obviously, if you've got a boat, it's great. Is there some opportunities for shore fishermen and other folks at Chatfield right now?
A little bit more challenging still at Chatfield. There's been some guys that have been getting into some decent numbers of fish, not like we're seeing at Cherry Creek at the moment, but depending upon who you talk to and who's out there, it can be okay at the moment. We're still waiting on a little bit more warmer water. That post-spawn bite at Chatfield is typically a lot more challenging than that Cherry Creek bite is on post spawn, with just how the lake is built with the underwater contours. But if I was a shore angler right now, I would be, and if I was a shore angler, and I'll add this, if I'm looking to fish in the metro area, I would be more focused in on my smaller local ponds and smaller lakes rather than my bigger bodies of water. I'd be heading to that neighborhood Bass Lake. There's plenty of sagi and walleye options in various smaller bodies of water as well, and you can have great success on a variety of techniques out there. You can do anything from live bait under a slip bobber. You can throw bolt minnows. Even throwing a lipless crankbait or a chatterbait this time of year can be good. There's still some good bites to be had on some jerk baits in some of those lakes. So that would be more of what I would be doing if I was a shore angler heading out right now.
especially with the warm-up on Saturday and Sunday.
Definitely.
It looks like we're going to have, especially Sunday after we have some warm water today, you know, we'll just have to see where it goes. But that shore bite, do you think it's better during the day or in the evening or nighttime bite? Will it matter?
I would be saying that as we're moving forward here, talking about walleyes, you'll still be doing better as you're having daylight hours. Now, I still like my early morning and later evening type hours, particularly a little bit later evening this time of year because that water temperature has warmed up a little bit over the course of the day. But we've been finding that in most cases for the walleyes, as soon as that sun goes down, the bite dies a little bit. So maybe doing more in the day. And then that typically is how you're finding the largemouth as well right now, too. And that night bite really is there's heavy emphasis on the spring. And I always tell people down here at the store that one of the biggest preconceived notions that is incorrect about walleyes is that they only bite at night. That is absolutely not the case. And a lot of times in the summertime and springtime period, the day bite is much better.
Got it. So if folks want to travel a little bit, let's talk a little bit about maybe Pueblo and John Martin Reservoir or anywhere else that you've been hearing along the Front Range where people are having some luck.
Heading south is always a good thing this time of year, especially places like John Martin where the temperature is just a little bit warmer than we're finding along the Front Range, particularly with all the snow that we've been seeing lately, and thankfully for sure. But John Martin, early part of May, is one of my favorite locations in the entire region. It's tough to go target one species of fish down there because there are so many species of fish that all are participating. So you want to catch crappies, white bass, wipers, walleye, sawgeye, sauger, catfish, largemouth, smallmouth. It is a fantastic location to do so. Water level still is down from what you'd call full pool, but there's still plenty of timber in the water down there. And whether you're on the shore, in a kayak, in a float tube, or in a big boat, obviously, too, there's fantastic options in and around those weeds. So we're going to be throwing small, weedless swim baits through those weeds, like I love a walleye assassin or a kitech, but even little small panfish plastics like Bobby Garland stuff underneath a beetle spin arm all can be insanely good down there. You can catch them on bait as well. But that is a definite location to circle over the next couple of weeks. And then Pueblo is going to be turning on the same way. It's not been incredibly effective as of late as far as bite is concerned. But as we see this warm up, and I mean, looking at the temperature down there, we're going to be 80s at minimum, it's looking like this weekend. And that will usually spur this bite where those walleyes are going to be up shallow. And we're going to be in on a great jig bite within the next week or so, and a lot of times under 10 feet of water.
That's fantastic. So let's turn our attention a little bit to maybe the mountains and some other opportunities up there in the event that people want to get onto lakes that have the caps coming off of them.
Yeah, going back to what I was talking about where there's so many things to do this time of year.
Although you have amazing, really.
Although you have great opportunities on the Front Range and on the Eastern Plains coming up here, the mountain bike this time of year is awesome as well. So yesterday we had Spinney open up. And so it's been different this year, though. The water level is much lower than they normally are seeing, so they're not open to any trailered boats yet. It's all hand launch only and shore fishing access. But hopefully with some water coming in, we'll be able to see that really open up for boating. And I haven't heard any reports, but that typically is an awesome place to go. Early season like this, if you're throwing conventional tackle, I'm not talking about we can't be trolling, obviously, because we can't be putting the trailered boats in, but casting a Tasmanian Devil is a great choice, but one of the staples at Spinney are your tube jigs, making sure that they're unscented and unsalted. But a 2.5-inch brown craw tube jig is one of my most deadly patterns up on your high plains lakes like that. A lot of times I will add a stinger hook on the back of it, and for folks that don't know, that's basically tying in a secondary hook that's hanging in the skirt of your tube jig. And a lot of times those trout will come and just nip at the tails of those tubes, so that is a great way to go there. Additionally, fly fishing, there's awesome opportunities as well. Usually in the early season, as I mentioned, I haven't heard exactly what was going on yesterday up there, but you can usually get in a lot of fish with scuds and egg patterns right now. Balanced leeches and woolly buggers are also great ways to go. And you can strip those leeches. You can run the balanced leeches under an indicator. There's all kinds of great opportunities there. But another place that I think gets hit less than Spinney right at ice off is Antero. You're not seeing boats on Antero just yet, but that lake ices out right with Spinney, and although there's been a little bit of ice this last week up there still, that ice-off time frame works incredibly well on the edges of those weed lines, and you can have some of your most high-production days on Antero or Spinney right now.
That's great. So folks that are interested in the trout maybe don't want to, because obviously there's going to be some crowds at Spinney and Antero, but they want to do some other river fishing. Let's talk a little bit about the pre-runoff. I was up on the Arkansas River 2 weekends ago looking for the blue-wing olive hatch. Didn't find it, but had good luck fishing the Arkansas. It was perfect flows-wise. I think they've been bumped up a little bit now, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, the major drainages and what people can do, either gear or flies, and what you're hearing about people having real good luck there as well.
Yeah, so if you're looking to get in on a little bit of clear water, the time is of the essence right now. This last week kind of postponed a little bit of runoff with some of the colder temperatures. The week prior, we had quite a bit of water coming down the drainages, but that does not necessarily mean that it's going to be turning that bite off. But this is one of the best times, in my opinion, to go and hit your river drainages and your bigger river drainages. So like you're talking about, certainly can see some blue-winged olives that are going to be coming off, caddis here and there on the majority of your drainages. But for the most part, you will be fishing subsurface. So whether you're up on the Colorado or you're on the Eagle, or you're on the Arkansas, there's a variety of patterns that really are pretty good staples in all locations on the fly. Pat's Rubber Leg is a great place to start. That is imitating a stone fly, and it's pretty darn heavy. So a lot of times I'll be running something like a Pat's Rubber Leg and then trailing a smaller blue-winged olive or Betis pattern. If anyone hears the term Betis, that is referencing a blue-winged olive and of the nymph form. So a lot of times I'll run that bigger path, and then I'll be trailing something smaller behind it, like a Juju Betis or even a small pheasant tail or Copper John can work quite well. Now, if the water's more off color, I may be running a bit brighter trailing fly. That big path a lot of times can go pretty good. You can go with darker colors like a purple that show up really well on those more muddy water scenarios. But then on a trailing pattern, rather than running the darker Betis, you may run something like a Rainbow Warrior. So it's going to be a really bright Opal Mirage tinsel tide pattern that's really flashy that can be great in a situation like that. But you also have awesome opportunities on conventional gear as well. Sometimes the wind can be really blowing in some of those drainages, particularly up on the Colorado, and fly fishing can be a bit of a chore. The spinning rod allows you to get to the other side of the river a lot of times, because that's one thing about these big drainages is a lot of the places it's pretty challenging to cross. So you don't have nearly as many opportunities to get all the way across the river, particularly up on the Colorado, as you would on lower water times. But you can get to the other side with some heavier spinners like a Blue Fox Vibrax. It's really great. A nice bright gold blade works good along with Panther Martin on a similar type standpoint. But over the years, I really like some of your hard baits as well. There's a brand new one from Berkeley called a Hit Stick that is actually a polycarbonate bait, but it swims a lot like a balsa bait, but it's a little less expensive. So that's a great option there. I'm at a size 7 or a size 5. And as I mentioned, those sizes, that's referencing how many centimeters the bait is. So if you ever see that there's a bait that's a size 4 or a size 5, that's the amount of centimeters. But those baits work great. Little X-Wraps, or one of my favorites from a local Colorado company, is an HD Trout Lure from Dynamic Lures. And those guys come in some fantastic little brown trout colors, and those guys can be very effective. The majority of the fish in all of the river drainages that we were just talking about are going to be brown trout. There's rainbows that are mixed in, but those browns definitely have an ability to spawn quite well in those river drainages. So those browns, or those bigger ones especially, they're pretty toothy, and they're big predators. So sometimes running a larger fish-oriented presentation, whether it be a streamer on a fly rod or some of these various lures we're talking about on a spinning rod, all can be effective. And now one other thing I like to point out is that a lot of times people get kind of turned off on the off-color. It's a little bit more challenging at times. You certainly can catch a lot of fish during that off-color time frame. But if you're finding that there's a lot of off-color water, either going upstream or downstream, depending upon the specific body of water, can get you into more clear water. So if you have a secondary feeder creek that's coming in downstream, that may clear up the river if it's not flowing dirty. But you also, if you obviously get above that feeder creek that is pushing that dirty water in there, you can get into a more clear water scenario moving up. And we're so fortunate on all of these river drainages that there's great access on all of them on federal land. So you can move up and down the river and find great opportunities for miles and miles.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that's really important to note about that is if you do have some dirty water, don't forget the edges, because the edges are so important.
Especially high dirty water.
Fish those, you know, right up against the bank of the high water, because those fish will stage right up against those edges. So don't walk in right away. Fish the edge first before you get into the river.
Just like conventional fishing, you look at people on the shore and they're trying to cast as far as they can in a lake. But people in a boat are doing the exact opposite. They're casting back to the shoreline a lot of times.
That's right.
So it's the same thought process in a river. Like, you want to get out there, and you're like, man, I want to lay it all the way onto that other side of the creek. And then you go cross the bridge and go the other side, and you feel like you're doing the exact same thing. Well, like you mentioned, fish close to you first before you move out into the river.
Yep, completely.
Austin Parr is our guest. Discount Fishing Tackle is the store. And Kevin Flesh is also with us today. And Austin, when we mentioned this in just a couple of minutes here, but we mentioned this a few weeks ago. You know, it is your responsibility to know all the rules, regulations, just like we are in the hunting and everything. But, man, there's so many different species and rules on what you can keep, what you can't, and how many. So what is the best way for people to really understand all the different species? And, you know, it's up to them to understand all the rules and regulations.
Definitely. So I see it all the time, and this is kind of a slight bit of a side note, but I see it especially on Facebook groups where people will post a picture of a fish on a stringer and ask people, what is this fish? Don't do that.
That would be me. Yeah.
I saw it with a tiger trout the other day where somebody said that, what is this? And it's on a stringer, obviously dead. So that's not something you want to be doing. But Parks and Wildlife has done a fantastic job orchestrating all of the different regulations in their annual publication on their rules and regulations. You can find it online. You can find it in all your sporting goods stores, including Discount Fishing Tackle. And in the back of the boat, or the back of the book, they have an illustration guide on the majority of the species in the state. Now, it's not fully encompassing on that, but then in the back of that book, before you're finding that illustration page, they have body of water specific regulations. So you're going to be going to a specific body of water. Look that up. It will tell you if there's any specific regulations on any types of fish species, and then it's your responsibility, obviously, to be able to identify those species and figure out what lengths are going to be correct to keep. Now, they also do an awesome job on the rivers, where there's not just a blanket regulation on a river. Between, say, an inlet and a bridge or something of the sort, there can be different regulations depending upon where you are in the stream. So that is all also orchestrated and shown really well in that book. So certainly look at that and make sure that you are abiding by the regulations, whether it's keeping fish or what you're fishing with, live lures only versus bait auctions. And then a lot of times more in the hunting realm, you know, people will be using Onyx or the Colorado Hunting Atlas a lot.
Right.
I break that out fishing all the time, especially on the rivers, because there's small little sections of federal land versus private land versus state-owned land that all are not marked very well. And as a hunter, I'm sure you run into that a lot, where there may be a property boundary that is not even there at all. The same thing goes for fishing. So not only is it showing you where you can't fish, but it is showing you where you can fish. And it is the angler's or hunter's responsibility in this state to know. The landowner does not have to post that land. So don't, just because it's not marked, does not mean that you can go out there.
Right. And in closing, you know, of course, Kevin, a co-host here on the show and all, and a partner with us on our Haystack Help show as well. Kevin is an attorney and handles criminal law, personal injury law, but also wildlife violations. So while none of us plan to do something wrong, hey, sometimes it just honestly happens. And so I always tell you, put Kevin's office number in your phone, 303-806-8886. And any kind of wildlife violation that you may be involved in or have questions, Kevin will be glad to help you. Well, Austin, hey, man, we appreciate it. A wealth of information as always. And Kevin, man, great job. So we appreciate you guys talking fishing. So I'll talk on our next hunting.
Absolutely.
I'll talk on our next hunting segment. Okay. All right. You guys, thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You're listening to Sportsman Colorado. We got to take a short break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
This is Chris Kane with 303 Roofer. If you have an insurance claim on your roof and want to keep some of that money in your pocket, give us a call and we'll give you a cash bid to replace your roof. You pay insurance every month and now insurance has paid you. It's your money and we understand that. So give us a call at 303-390-1382 or visit our website, 303roofer.com.
Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. And not just my friends, but truly, the staff at Lone Tree feels like part of our family. Since 2002, they have provided the very best care for our pets. What we love about Lone Tree Vet is the services they provide covers all of our needs, from preventative care, dentistry, pain management, cardiology, dermatology, and eye care, as well as emergency and critical care. They also offer veterinary surgery and orthopedic care. And when you need to get away, they have a fantastic boarding lodge and a cat boarding lodge that is amazing. If your pet gets to go along, they can even assist you with your travel health certificates. And when your dog needs a little extra instruction, check out the K9 Academy. They helped us so much when we got a new puppy last year. And then, of course, there is the spectacular grooming salon that you and your pet will love. All of this and more at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. Oh, and check out the blogs to help you become a better parent at LoneTreeVet.com. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe that all pets deserve to have a good life. Call 303-708-8050. That's 303-708-8050. It's just one stop and all the care you need.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. Again, thank you so much for being with us. We want to thank Austin Parr and Kevin Flesh. Kevin had to slip out. So I will have our next guest alone here. Trevin Stolfus joins us from Outback Outdoors and Inspired Wild Podcast. Trevin, how are you, bud?
I'm good. It's a busy Saturday, you know, doing some family things out and about. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing well, man. And I know we were talking through text the other day, man, it has been a long time. It seems like, this last 15 months or so has just been crazy, as we all know. But, it is good to have you back on the show again.
Yeah, it's good to be back. You know, it's interesting. We're living through, we always talk about the interesting times we're living through. But, you know, our industry, the outdoor industry, is really strong right now.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's really what I was going to kick off with, just kind of getting the heartbeat of it, in your mind. I mean, from, you look at all the gun sales and all the different things, the ammo, and pretty good weight, you know, if you're ordering things with a bow or a boat or ATV, it seems like, business is good for everyone.
Yeah, it really is. I've talked to a couple of different companies that are literally having record years in reference to, you know, years past when the economy was still good. They're still breaking records. But, you know, people can't, you know, with this COVID restriction, they can't do a lot, mm-hmm. but they can get outdoors.
Sure.
So they are in droves.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's talk about your TV side of things for you with Outback Outdoors. And I think you're on, or is this 10 years?
Say that again one time.
At the Outback Outdoors, is this the 10th year for you?
Oh, 10th year. No. We are now, we'll be going into our, we'll be releasing our 13th year.
13? Wow.
Yeah, this season, crazy as that sounds.
Man.
We've got a few changes. We are, we've pulled off the Sportsman's Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Because Amazon Prime, we got an opportunity with Amazon Prime, and we did a little testing, and the response was off the charts. So we were pretty excited about that. That digital format allows me, being a little more artistic, TV show is 22 minutes, 4 commercial breaks, and all that type of stuff, but it's really hard to keep the flow of an adventure going.
Sure.
When you have to go to commercial.
Yeah.
And now with the Amazon Prime format, I'm not limited to 22 minutes, and I don't have to worry about commercials. I can just take and just tell the story as I feel it needs to be told, allowing for the emotional highs and lows, as you know, of a hunt to happen. And it could be 12 minutes long or it could be 45 minutes long.
Wow, that's great.
So there's a little more flexibility, and the viewership seems to be a little different than the Outdoor Channel, the Sportsman's Channel. Those guys are usually people that have bought that package, an extra package. It doesn't come standard on cable or mm-hmm. DirecTV or Dish. You know, they have to order it. So they're definitely a little harder core. I've actually been blown away at how our demographic of our fan base has really increased. People that are first time hunters, you know, versus hardcore guys, are finding us. And so, yeah, it's kind of exciting. A little bit different. You know, the digital age,
right.
I fight change probably like a lot of people a little bit, but sometimes change is good.
Yep, absolutely. Trevin Stolfus is our guest. And, you know, when you mentioned, you know, boy, first time, you know, looked like fishing license last year, they were, did like 100,000 more licenses. And, you know, the gun owners and different things like that. I was looking at a few figures this morning. They said 5 million new gun owners between January and July last year. And 40% of all sales were first-time gun buyers.
Right.
Man.
Right.
So how's this ammo thing, in your mind, one of the questions I was going to ask you, and, you know, you're talking with people in the industry as well, how do you see that ever catching up with all the new gun owners and demand?
You know, I don't have an answer to that. I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm excited at it because you got two fronts. You have, you know, a well-armed citizenry. I don't even know if citizenry is a word, but a well-armed.
It sounds good.
A well-armed community is a safe community. And I don't just mean from the forces of evil, but I mean from a government, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to be able to stand up for our rights, and we need to be able to make sure that the government works for us and not the other way around. And then on the flip side, the ability for people to connect with their food via hunting, and understanding how hunting is so vital to conservation. People look at hunters as killers, but the fact of the matter is you and I both know the importance of hunting, you know, with the Pittman-Robertson Act and what it does to create more dollars for conservation is vital.
Sure.
And so I'm excited about that. And I don't care if you're hunting with a bow, muzzleloader, rifle, whatever. I do think it's going to make a little bit more, crowds. I mean, I think sometimes there will be some areas that there's more people in some of these over-the-counter, areas that might be. I mean, and that's good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have mixed feelings because, you know, when you go out in the woods, you want to be alone. Right?
Sure.
You want to be the only one that's out there. But I do think that in some respects, it's okay. We might have to change a few licensing structures. There might not be as many over the counter just to make sure that we're hitting our conservation numbers and stuff like that as far as what we're doing license wise.
Right.
So, conservation. The animals that we take as hunters plays into the amount of a healthy population that's in an ecosystem, and it all plays a part. So,
sure.
I don't know that I got to your question because I don't really know the answer.
No, I know.
Is it going to catch up? But I hope it never does.
Yeah.
Because I love it. I love to see new people be involved, whether they're just going out and plinking steel, you know, at the range, or shooting foam targets at 3D tournaments, you know, whatever, or whatever that they enjoy. Hopefully that spills over into that connection with them going and trying to harvest their own food.
Yep, absolutely. Again, Trevin Stolfus is our guest. And, boy, so many things I want to talk to you about. It's been so long, so we got to talk. But let's talk about, you mentioned licensing. And you apply, you know, in different states with the shows and different things you do. Looking at the way they did the secondary draw last year, and they're doing that again this year, what kind of grade do you give Colorado? I guess I'll just put it that way, is the way our draw system works and licensing system works as opposed to a few of the other states neighboring us.
I think Colorado does all right. Do I think that there's some things they could do better? Selfishly, yes. But as a whole, I mean, I apply for probably 6 to 7 different states. You take a state that's very different, like New Mexico, that has no preference point systems, a very low allocation of non-resident tags, But I'm from New Mexico, so I also understand that. What I mean by that is, if we're, in my opinion, hunters that are that live in that state should have preferential treatment. Colorado doesn't do that as much. While New Mexico doesn't have preference point systems where you can actually apply for something over a limited or even a longer amount of time, your chances tend to increase, and you can kind of plan, especially with mule deer, elk, and antelope, stuff like that. You can kind of plan when you're going to draw it. But with New Mexico, it's all a random draw. And then the non-resident allocations are pretty low. So there's the two flip sides of the coin. I think Colorado's doing good. I think that there is a point where we, as a sportsman community, need to make sure that we are voicing our opinions. Here's a good example. If I told you, Scott, I didn't vote in the election, but I wanted to sit here and complain about who got elected, what would you tell me?
Yeah, you have no right to complain.
That's right. Yeah. Sorry, partner. You didn't take your voice and be heard. Well, we need to do the same thing in regards to what we want to see changed and different. And I'm going to segue that into what I think you and I spoke the other day about is one of my new positions at the Colorado Bowhunters Association as co-editor or basically I'm the director, the creative director, art director, whatever, of the new Colorado Bowhunter magazine.
Right.
And I say new. It's been around a while, but it's a new magazine. It's revamped. We've revamped the website at the CBA, Colorado Bowhunters Association, stuff like that. But I segue into that because that's what the CBA does for bowhunters.
Mm-hmm.
They take a multitude of voices and unify them, communicating with the CPW, the Wildlife Commission, all these different things to have a unified voice, to at least help and give input to make better season dates, better licensing opportunities, stuff like that. So I think all of this comes into if I have a problem with the way the CPW is doing the draw, so like I need to speak out. But, you know, it can be hard to be heard when you're one voice. So sometimes it is good to be able to reach out and join organizations like the Colorado Bowhunters Association that has a legislative liaison, who has an individual whose job is just to communicate with the CPW. And then that way our voice is more readily heard. And the goal of the CBA, if you're a bowhunter, I don't understand why you wouldn't become a member of the CBA, is to further the enjoyment and the thrill of hunting with a handheld bow, you know, with a vertical handheld bow, and protect those rights for the future generation. But if you're not a bow hunter, you still need to find organizations that can help magnify your voice.
Sure, and many of these are $30, $35, $40 bucks a year, you know? We ought to be a part of all of those.
Yeah. Whether it's Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation or the Mule Deer Foundation or Sheep or Mountain Goat Alliance, you know, whatever it might be, you know, the key that one of the things we've been talking a bunch about at the CBA is how do we not only unify our voice as hunters, but how do we unify our voice as organizations?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these overlap. When we can turn around and do better for the ecosystem or a particular species or set of species in an ecosystem, that might be the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, that might be the Mule Deer Foundation, that might be the CBA. There might be three or four organizations out there that's the goal they're going for. So if we unify even more, it's just, again, being able for our voices to be heard. And I think that's important.
No, absolutely. And you can go to Colorado Bowhunter Association. You can go to their website. You can follow them on Facebook and all, Instagram, of course. And as I mentioned, one-year membership, $30. You can join it for 3 years for $75. Specials for youth, I was looking at this morning, $10. And then for a three-year, $25 for youth. You can get a life membership. But, again, we need to support all of these different groups that do have a place at the table, so to speak, in some of these discussions, right?
Right, right. And the Colorado Bowhunters.org, I believe did I just say Colorado Bow Hunters, or is it the ColoradoBowHunting.org? You know what? I should probably know that.
Yeah, that's all. I'll check it.
The website. I think it's ColoradoBowHunting.org. But the thing is that with that membership, not only do you get the membership to help push that forward, but you get 6 issues of the Colorado Bowhunter magazine. There's banquets, there's shoots. It plugs you into a lot more of the community, and so it's bigger than just supporting an organization, which I think we all agree is a good thing. But it goes even further than that. So
sure,
and it is community.
It is ColoradoBowHunting.org.
Yeah, ColoradoBowHunting.org. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So Henry Ferguson, who we both know, is probably going to kick my butt for that because he's the VP of the PR, and I just—it'll
be our secret.
I had a blank because I deal with it so much. But yeah, we're real excited. I don't know how we're pushing on the political break, but I'm real excited at the new magazine. And what I mean by new magazine is during COVID, we went to a digital format because it's just cheaper. We also didn't have the banquet the last year because of COVID, which was one of our main fundraisers. So we were trying to, save a little money, this and that. Well, we're back to print now. May, June, we just finished that. That's going to be in the mailbox. I would assume when I get home from doing these errands today, I'm hoping that my magazine will be in the mailbox, because there's something to be said for holding and touching and feeling and turning a page versus a digital print.
No.
I know we live in a digital age, but some of us still like to turn pages, and I still like to feel the paper and have something to reference easily, for months to come. But we're excited about this. We're back to printing, and so again, with that $30 or whatever membership you get, it includes those 6 months. So.
Oh, cool. Well, Kevin, let me hit a break real quick. When we come back, let's talk about Inspired Wild Podcast, and we'll talk a little archery with Trevin Stolfus. We'll be right back. Now's the time to get into D&D Tire and get your vehicle ready for those beautiful mountain drives or those summer road trips with the family. From AC and heating, brake service, battery replacement, engine repair, transmission service, oil changes, and of course, all of your tire needs, D&D Tire has you covered. Right now, you can get up to 6 months special financing with approved credit and $150 back on a qualifying tire purchase when you open a Goodyear credit account. If you're looking for trustworthy technicians and reasonable prices, along with outstanding service, it's D&D Tire. 3 locations to serve you, 2 in Aurora and 1 in Parker. Check them out, ddtireservice.com.
Hi, Jack Corrigan for Len Lyle Chevrolet. Len Lyle Chevrolet is open and safe. It's truck month, and they have the best deals of the year on all trucks and SUVs, like up to $10,000 off on half-ton Silverados. Or come check out the all-new Tahoes and Suburbans for 2021. Len Lyle has been there for 35 years, and low overhead really does mean low prices. Check them out on the web, LenLyleChevy.com. Go east and pay the least. Chevy. Find new roads.
For over 8 years, you've been hearing me talk about Phoenix Weaponry in Berthoud. Hey, this is Scott Watley, your host of Sportsman of Colorado, here once again to tell you why Phoenix Weaponry should be your choice to build your new custom firearm. Phoenix Weaponry is a custom firearms manufacturer. With a combined experience of over 45 years, the Phoenix family can master even the most unique idea. Phoenix Weaponry manufactures of precision custom parts for ARs and builds custom precision rifles, as well as a full line of pistol, shotgun, and rifle suppressors. Whether you're an experienced connoisseur or a new enthusiast, let Phoenix Weaponry build you a dream rifle or a range blaster. Phoenix Weaponry is your one-stop shop for all of your firearm needs. Owner Aaron Casey says, "Our attention to detail and one-on-one customer service sets us apart from our competition. Do it yourself or complete builds at Phoenix Weaponry. They're there to help you build your dream gun. Call them today, 720-340-2496. If you can dream it, Phoenix Weaponry can build it. 720-340-2496 or check them out at phoenixweaponry.com.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLC's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
Hey, let me tell you about one of my favorite stores. It's the Outdoorsman's Attic, located at 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan. Hi, this is Scott Watley, and you may ask, why is this one of my favorite stores? Well, you never know what you're going to find. But I will promise you this, you will find great service and great bargains from this family-owned store. It may be a great deal on that 12-gauge shotgun you've been looking for, or maybe that rifle you haven't been able to find anywhere. And hey, they might even have that ammo in stock that you have been driving all over town looking for. The Outdoorsman's Attic is a consignment store for hunting, fishing, and camping gear. Now look, you've been moving that gear around your garage for months. Don't move it. Take it to the Outdoorsman's Attic and turn it into cash. Need to get that fishing license? Maybe grab some live bait? Head on over to 2650 West Hamden. And if your firearm needs a little work, ask for Scott the Gunsmith. It's the Outdoorsman's Attic, 2650 West Hamden. Tell them Scott sent you.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watley. We are glad to have you with us. Trevin Stolfus is our guest. We're going to be talking now with Trevin about his podcast, Inspired Wild. So, Trevin, fill us in on how this got started and kind of what's going on with it.
Yeah, we are in our second year with the Inspired Wild podcast. We're on basically all your normal podcast platforms, from iTunes to Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, all that stuff. We started Inspired Wild podcast really because we wanted to share the stories of the adventures we were on more in a real in-depth type of way. That, of course, here we have this TV show that, or films or whatever, that's X number of minutes long, and a lot of it, the time, you don't get to see some of the other things that happen. And what that does is it kind of takes you through the whole experience. A lot of what we'll do is on a hunt, we'll come back, from a hard day of hunting or whatever,
right,
and we'll sit around the campfire, because I have a mobile system that I designed it for the ability to do it mobily in the field, and we'll talk about the day. And that's the podcast. You know, we might have three or four podcasts per hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it puts those fresh memories of that adventure. And sometimes I'm hearing it if it's, one of my counterparts, like a Tanner Vernon or one of the guys that I'm hunting with, maybe that's on the other side of the mountain hunting elk, and I'm here, and we come back, in the evening and share camp. They're telling me their story for the first time. So it's still that same type of feel, that campfire adventure telling story. So pretty exciting. It's definitely more than you would get out of watching the show that gets developed from that hunt, because there's more behind the scenes, stuff like that. Well, when we decided to do it, we also found out that it was a great way to utilize in the show, because imagine, if you will, we're trying to tell the story, but you get back in the studio or the editing suite or whatever, and you're like, okay, you remember this happened? What footage did we have for that? And what we can do then is go, oh, wait a minute, we have a whole podcast or three stories of that are going to be focused in on this show, and we talk about them throughout this whole, 5 minutes, right?
Right.
I can then pull that out, use that as almost a narrative for the show. And then, of course, you put the actual footage of what happened maybe on top of that, so that the storyline's carried by the actual conversation you had at camp. It's actually kind of a cool idea. I'm surprised people don't do it. You know, you'll see a lot of guys go back in the studio after they've produced a show, and they'll do this narrative over it, which can be all right, a little dramatic, in my opinion, I'm not an actor, so, it's a little fake. Sometimes it can come across a little fake when you're, dubbing it or narrating over it. But where I really saw the value of this was in kids. We take a lot of kids hunting. And if I point a camera at a kid and that red blinking light comes on that says record, they go, aw. But if we're sitting around a campfire and they have a headset on, and pretty soon after, the first 5 minutes of talking, they forget that they have a headset on, and they just tell their stories. And it's much more of a relaxed, natural way of telling something. So it works really well with the show. So that's a long-winded way of saying how Inspired Wild got started and why we kicked it off. And it's done well. It's another avenue of content that, if you would have told me 10 years ago that podcasting or the podcast, if you will, would be as popular, I would say no way. But I was out this morning working working at the house, and I had my earplugs in, and I'm listening to a podcast.
It's the way, yeah. So again, that's Inspired Wild Podcast, and you can follow him on all the social media platforms, as Trevin said, well. And I promise you, they're a lot of fun, very entertaining, and you will learn some things as well. All right, let's talk a little archery. And I'm waiting on a new bow from Phil over at No Limits myself. So I had the one that you guys hooked me up with way back when we started Sportsman of Colorado, and it's been great. But I'm going to get that new Hoyt that's out. Is it the Ultra?
RX5?
Yeah, RX5 Ultra.
Oh, I think you'll like that. I think you'll really like that, especially with you have a longer draw length. I'm one of them guys that has a little shorter draw length, and so actually the Ventum, for my setup, it's a little got a little more punch to it for me.
Oh, okay. All right. Good deal. And Wilmore Court, which Davis Tent, he and I, we're going to do a whitetail hunt in late October together, archery.
Who's
so,
that?
Will Marquardt?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. Where's that going to be at?
In Kansas. Yeah.
Oh, with big bucks.
Do you know the Versailles?
Give me next size town, because there's so many small.
No, ones. Versailles Outfitters. Jim and Karen.
Oh, no, I don't. I thought you were saying it was by Versailles.
Oh, no. Phil has hunted out there several times and everything. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that. So I'm going to really do this, man, and so looking forward to it. But
well, it's unique. You're from Texas originally, right?
Yep.
So it's not – I mean, it's no different than hog hunting.
Sure.
Whitetail hunting, I mean, in Texas a lot of times you end up in a box blind, maybe on a a row where it's so thick and animals having to come out. But it's just unique with a bow because you are limited to your shot, yardage. But you're in a situation where, of course, the outfitter's done all the homework. That's the beauty of going with an outfitter is he's done that homework. And you're sitting in the stand with the right wind. And all of a sudden, it becomes a chess match. And so it's so much different than, let's say, an elk hunt where, okay, there's no mule deer, there's no elk here. Let's hike to the next ridge, right? You can, the harder you work, sometimes the better off you are. Whereas in whitetail, the more mentally stable you are, the smarter you are, the more successful you are. So it's a unique challenge. I'm ate up with whitetail, and I had never hunted whitetail. I was 35 years old, 33 years old before I ever hunted whitetail.
Right, right. So let's go through for maybe those, you know, really getting into archery and getting set up. And there's several shops around. And, of course, I'm most familiar with No Limits. But if people are up north, you know, a little bit closer to you, you know, it may be more convenient some other shops up there. But, boy, just finding a good shop where you can shoot and they got a good pro shop and people help you, boy, is key in getting this all set up and dialed in, right? Trevin, have we got you? All right.
You got me?
Oh, I got you now. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can't work my iPhone because when I turn 50, all of a sudden I realize that somehow the electronic knows you're 50, so it makes it harder to work a phone.
I know.
No, but no, you bring up a good point. Picking that right shop is so important. And then once you get your bow set up, you know, like you say, Phil or Bill Pellegrino in the Springs, you know, you've got Rocky Mountain Archery up here in Fort Collins. They offer these opportunities of 3D shoots in the winter and, you know, some of these type things indoors that allow you to then take that bow and even get better with it. Because just like shooting a rifle, man, it takes time behind it.
Right.
And that's where you get accurate. So.
Yeah. And then what do you, like, man, you know what, the confusing part to me is just the whole arrow, and I guess it's like, you know, trying to pick the right cartridge for a rifle, whatever, but man, there's so many arrow choices and broadheads and, you know, fixed blade, mechanical blade. I mean,
how do you
start out with what?
Well, the same way you do when you started out with a gun, with a rifle, with what caliber are you going to be hunting with? You know, what bullet are you going to... You take people that are more experienced, that you trust their opinion, and you lean on them. I mean, any sport you do, right?
Sure.
You take a coach that helps you, and it helps cut the learning curve. I mean, I could tell you what my favorite cartridge is for elk. I could tell you what my favorite arrow is for new deer, but it's because of having done this for so long and then had the amount of time to play with it, to change things, to experiment. You know, there's some flexibility. I think there's some basics. And you're plugged in with No Limits and Phil and Bo.
Bo's helping me out.
All those guys, I just lean on them.
Mm-hmm.
What you want is you want accuracy.
Yeah.
Okay? They're gonna put you into that mold or into that spectrum, if you will, of you hit where you aim, it's gonna be lethal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's fun. And in my opinion, it's fun to try a couple of different broadheads. Then you find one that flies true, and boom. I mean, you're kind of right where you need to be. That's my two cents on that.
Yeah.
Is lean on them heavily because they have such plethora of experience, and you know they understand what that kinetic energy, and that's what it all boils down to, right? Is you're whether you're shooting a projectile downrange through a rifled barrel,
mm-hmm.
or you're shooting a carbon stick with a pointy broadhead on the end of it, right? What kind of energy is it maintaining and carrying downrange for the game that you're hunting? And that's what they'll really shine.
And do you practice a lot of different, you know, positions like kneeling and, you know, from tree stand?
I do. I actually have an electric pole buried in my yard with a tree stand in it. Now, that's a little bit extreme, but I also have 5 3D targets on my archery range at my house. And I shoot, Phil has his Alpha Bow Hunting Competition, which is a fun way to test your skills, and I shoot 3D shoots where they're more uniquely, not just for competition, but more uniquely hunting driven, so that you're actually hunting, or you're shooting in hunting environment type situations, i.e. I'm shooting through a small hole in a bunch of brush on my knees at an animal that I can see the vitals. And that would be a realistic scenario for hunting. So I try and put myself, a lot of people don't like to shoot in windy days. I'll even go out and fling some arrows in windy days because a windy day will make my effective range almost cut in half. And you need to know that. I think that's the key thing, and Phil preaches this in his alpha bow hunting seminars, is that if you understand your effective range, I'm not talking about Scott standing out in the backyard shooting 60 yards on a calm evening in his flip-flops on flat ground. I'm talking about us shooting under hunting-like conditions. What's my effective range? And if I'm kneeling, is my effective range the same as when I'm standing? Mm-hmm. If the wind's blowing, you know. So if you do all of that, and this is where Phil just does such a phenomenal job teaching on this, if you do all that before you ever step into the woods, you're going to be more successful because you're going to avoid the shots that are risky that might wound an animal that you never find, or misses. And I'd rather miss than wound an animal and not find him, of course. But I shouldn't be taking the shot if it's risky in the first place, right? All but right. If I don't know that and I haven't made that decision beforehand, makes it tough.
Well, Trevin, hey, man, I appreciate it. We will not make it another year before we do this again. I promise you we'll do some more things. And, man, we appreciate it. And thanks for all you do. Thanks for your friendship. And you helped us a lot when we got started. So, man, we appreciate it.
You got it. And I'm always – if I'm in town, I love to talk hunt.
All right, bud. We'll do it. Trevin Stolfus, Outback Outdoors, Inspired Wild Podcast. Follow him. We want to thank Austin Parr, Kevin Flesch also today. Most of all, thank you for joining us on Sportsman of Colorado. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.